live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. This is the one program that all of you independent, critical thinking, open-minded, and progressive individuals can listen to see how we can empower ourselves. This is an empowerment hour, the latest on health and healing, always from quality, independent science. Every single thing we share is backed up. Commentaries by some of the most critical thinking individuals on the planet. Issues involving social concerns that we all should have. Environmental insights. Talk back, your chance to share your opinion. Even on the most controversial topics, we always look for positive solutions. Today, I want to share with you some of the questions I ask people that I'm counseling. And since I normally counsel, the vast majority of people are dying. They have been given up. They have a letter from their doctor that they are terminal. And I want to compare what they tell me with a brand new study, Top Regrets About Dying. Then there's new research out there about how our diet today, the modern average diet, is helping bacteria wreak havoc on our teeth. Some people in this audience choose to eat fish. That's fine. Many of us are vegan. And a lot of us are vegetarian. So what kind of fish should you eat if you're going to eat fish, and what kind should you avoid? I'll share the latest on that today, and I think that'll be very helpful for a lot of people. And then we will also look at caffeine. There's new information, once again, of why we shouldn't be using it. And also excessive TV in childhood is linked to what? Wow, we'll get to that. As you can see, these are the issues that come from original science. You won't have heard them on television or radio. We're not allowing ourselves to ever be used as a propaganda vehicle for, you know, getting out something that's pro-industry. My guest in the second part of our program today will be a continuation of our series of conversations with remarkable minds. He is Reverend Matthew Fox. He is one of the most progressive theologians and spiritual visionaries today. He is the visionary behind what is called creation spirituality, an ecumenical and interspiritual theology that posits life as an original blessing. And for years, the current Pope, Pope Benedict, the then known as Cardinal Ratzinger, and he was the head of the Vatican's Congregation of Doctrine and Faith, tried to silence Reverend Fox, which eventually led to his being expelled from the Dominican Order and his subsequent joining the Anglican Church. We're going to talk about the truth behind the resignation of Pope Benedict the 16th, and more importantly, the crisis in the Catholic Church. Today, we will have some commentaries, my own and others. Short commentaries today from Glenn Ford. I'm going to share Glenn's insights on what he feels Obama's State of the Corporate Union speech should have been. And then also, working is becoming more like prison. This is part of our new fascism series. As some workers forced, are you ready for this, to wear electronic bands. That's right. It's here. It's happening. Did you know about it? They will track everything you do, including your bathroom breaks. And I'll give you the latest on what's coming to a store near you, an office near you, your electronic bands. And then, if time permits, I will talk about economic facts that I have that challenge everything that is being said out of official Washington. They are lying about everything. And I'll tell you 7 points that are specific and what we can do about them. And finally, profiting from human misery. Truthdig.com, commentary by Chris Edges. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. When I sit across from an individual, frequently with their families, more often than not, the person doesn't know who I am, but some sister, mother, daughter, father, someone got them to come to see me, because otherwise there's no way out. There's no next act. It's death. And one of the very first things I ask him is, if you could live your life all over again, what would be some of the things you would do if there was no, if there was only yes, do it? No judgment, no guilt, no recrimination, no insecurity, no uncertainty, just yes, do it. And they frequently tell me things. One of the most important things I hear from probably 90% of the people I've counseled is that, gee whiz, if only they had lived their own authentic life and not always doing what other people expected them to do in their career and who to marry and how many children to have and where to live and what kind of job to have, even the quality of their education. Also, they said that they gave much too much time to their careers and way too little to their relationships. They wish they would have spent more time in quality sharing with their loved ones, with their children and their essential other. And also, sometimes I hear them just a deep expression of how they wish they would have spent more time with their family and friends, and their real good friends, but they didn't. They made everything else more important. Here is the latest study, and I'm going to share this with you because I think it's germane. And this is in The Guardian from Susie Steiner. A nurse has recorded the most common regrets of the dying, quote, and among the top ones is, I wished I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. This was the most common regret of all, when people realize that their life is almost over and look back clearly on it, and it's easy to see how many dreams have gone unfulfilled. Most people have not honored even a half of their dreams and had to die knowing that it was due to choices they had made or not made. Health brings a freedom very few realize until they no longer have it. Number two, I wished I had not worked so hard. Quote, this came from every male patient that I nursed. They missed their children's youth and their partner's companionship. Women also spoke of this regret, but as most were from an older generation, many of the female patients had not been known as breadwinners. All the men I nursed deeply regretted spending so much of their lives on the treadmill of a work existence. Three, I wished I had the courage to express my feelings. Many people suppress their feelings in order to keep peace with others. As a result, they settled for a mediocre existence and never became who they were truly capable of becoming. Many developed illnesses relating to the bitterness and sentiment they carried as a result. Four, I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. Often they would not truly realize the full benefits of old friends until their dying weeks, and it was not always possible to track them down. Many had become so caught up in their own lives, they had let go golden friendships slip over the years. There were many deep regrets about not giving friendships the time and effort that they deserved. Everyone misses their friends when they're dying. And last, I wish that I had let myself be happier. This is a surprisingly common one. Many people did not realize until the end that happiness is a choice. They had stayed stuck in old patterns and habits. The so-called comfort of familiarity overflowed into their emotions as well as their physical lives. Fear of change had them pretending to others and to themselves that they were content, when deep within they longed to laugh properly and have silliness in their life again. And at least 90% of what she recorded, I have recorded over the years. So it's a common theme. So my thought would be simple. Why not now start all over? Start today. When I wake up early in the morning and I start my day at 4 a.m., I make a circle on a page. And on that, I make up a pie square. And I put, what ideally would I like to do today? My ideals. And I write them in. And then what must I do? Well, I have to do this radio show, and that takes this amount of time. And I have to write some commentaries, and that takes that amount of time. I have to counsel so many people, no matter where I'm at, over the phone, if I'm traveling, as I am now. And that takes time. I have to exercise. Depends upon whether I'm getting ready for national or international or local competition, how much time I have to set aside. I have to continue growing and doing things creative and reaching out to friends. All these things have to fit in there. And I find that once I put everything in there, there's more often more things that have to go into a day than there is time to do it. And therefore, I have to look at what could be taking away my time. And then I look at, all right, where do most people put their time? And then it's lost. Television, constant internet chatter and so-called friends who aren't, and wasted moments of distracting yourself by always looking for some other place to be and some other thought to have, kind of always running throughout a day, being chased by a shadow of insecurity, uncertainty, and fear. And so what if you just eliminated all that? You got to the point on phone calls, you made them short, quality, kind, but don't let anyone feel that they have the right to take your time. Stay away from television unless there's something unique or special you want to watch. Try to limit yourself to no more than about 4 hours a week. And all you have to do, like I turn on Bill O'Reilly, I turn on Sean Hannity, I turn on Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh, I turn on Michael Savage, the smartest one of them all, by the way, and not in their class. Mark Levin, he's in it. They couldn't reach his class, by the way. Mark Levin, a goofball. Funny, very funny. My God, man, he is so rabid on Neocon. And then on the left, I turn all these people, and in the first 3 minutes, they tell me what they're going to do, who they're going to have on, and then it's all the same every single day. Anger, hate, blaming, never any solutions, and the same talking heads, all mindless. But at least I know what they're dealing with and how they're dealing with it, so I don't have to keep listening. It takes a few minutes. But think of the people that stay tuned all day long and become an extension of that propaganda. So then when it comes time to things that matter, spending quality time with your companion pet, then turn off your cell phone. Spending time with yourself or with loved one having a meal, don't answer any phone. Turn the ringers off. Going out, turn the ringers off. Leave your cell phones behind. Hey, if there's an emergency, you'll find out about it. If someone died, they'll still be dead at the end of the movie, play, or anything else. Too bad, that's reality. But we live as if somehow we must stay connected at all moments in case. In case of what? In case you actually slow down and have a quality life. So give up that idea that somehow you should always be connected to everyone, and without you, there wouldn't be that moment. Well, let me tell you something. We'll all come and we'll all go, and life will go on. So get out of the idea that we're all indispensable, and that way at least you get back to what's important to you, making a list each day of what you need in your life to maintain your emotional, creative, intellectual, spiritual, and physical well-being. And that should be your priority. Modern diet, helping bacteria wreak havoc to our teeth. We know that in our mouths there is a permanent state of disease today, and that's directly related to all the processed and overly refined foods that we consume. And that ends up decreasing the good bacteria and increasing the bad bacteria. After studying a large group of prehistoric human skeletons from Northern Europe, an international team of researchers, according to The Age from Australia, has established for the first time that the DNA can survive within the calcified plaque known as tartar for over 8,000 years. That DNA trapped in the tartar reveals that the meat-dominated, grain-free diet of the hunter-gatherers was different than our mouths today. Published in Nature Genetics, the research shows declining oral health can be pegged to major changes in the way humans lived and ate, with the start of farming in the Neolithic Age and the Industrial Revolution being key turning points. And the arrival of farming in Europe about 8,000 years ago and the Industrial Revolution in the 1800s each increased the amount of refined carbohydrates and sugars that we consume, which led to our mouths being dominated by cavity-causing bacteria. Quote from University of Adelaide, "That's when you see a really big drop in diversity and a really significant rise in bacteria associated with dental caries, which causes holes in the teeth." Professor Cooper, who led the study, said the natural human bacterial ecosystem found in people's mouths benefited from diversity. Now, what does this mean in just lay language? It means that when you have nuts like walnuts and almonds and pistachios and all the other nuts and seeds, pumpkin seeds and sesame seeds and sunflower seeds and root vegetables and starchy vegetables and grains that are not refined and beans, all that allows a variety of microorganisms in the mouth. If you eliminate the simple sugars and you try to have alkalizing foods, then the mouth's pH is healthier, which means you're less likely to have bacterial overgrowth and cavities. Also, we have to remember there was a time when people may have eaten healthier foods. They certainly weren't processed, but they didn't know oral hygiene. So even a good food, a healthy food that resides after you eat can build up also a negative plaque. And that's why brushing, flossing, water irrigation all help stimulate a healthier oral hygiene. Just imagine waking up. Let me give you, I'm actually doing a documentary on this. I have several pet documentaries I want to do, that my more important social documentaries, like on the abuses in mental health and psychiatry and the Manufacturing Madness, that's called. It'll be out in about a year. And Poverty Inc., that'll be out late this summer, and some of the others. But I'm going to be doing one on stopping the All-American Genocide Machine, where I take you around the world and show you that virtually every culture we go into to exploit, and what happens to them. I've done this. The writing is done. I have to go into production on it. Things like that. But I always wanted to do one on what was it like living at the court of the Sun King, for example. And you could have pretty much taken any other court at the time and duplicated this. You would have people who spent their whole days in leisure activity and gossip, because you weren't supposed to anything if you were at the court. And you could have up to 1,800 people and guests and servants at the court. But what was it like when you woke up in the morning? You didn't have running water. You didn't have refrigeration. You didn't have a toilet. Well, how did you brush your teeth? Well, you didn't. Well, how did you go to the bathroom? Well, a bucket. And if you were wealthy enough or important enough in the court, you would have a chambermaid that would come in and give you a clean bucket, which really wasn't clean. They'd just take what you did, throw over a cloth, take it out in the field and throw it out, and then wipe it and bring it back. But people have to go through the bathroom throughout the day. Well, then in the summertime, with no air conditioning and no way of ventilating, it got really rank, and it wasn't clean. None of the places were actually clean. And they had no hygiene. If you went into the kitchen, well, hold on, there were real no kitchens. Even the rural kitchen was outside. And they would bring in some game and that had been venison or some kind of bird or fish. Well, how long can fish stay without ice before it goes bad? Hours. And they might be eating a fish 2 days later, 3 days later. And the same with other meats. They didn't eat salads. They had some root vegetables, but root vegetables were relegated to poor people. Grains were relegated to poor people. Those at court were expected to have high-quality protein. And that showed that you could have pheasant and sweet. So a protein and a sweet with ales were a beverage was the main dishes of court. And you might have three or four or five different selections of dessert. And they had master dessert chefs. So, A, there was no hygiene. B, there was no brushing of teeth or mouthwash. So what they would do, they would be people that specialized in aromas. And you would go to one of these perfumeries, and they would let you test smell, scents. And when you liked a particular scent, they would make you up a bottle of it. And then you would just douse that. You would pat that on your body and... And then, of course, most of the people had lice, and bed bugs were endemic. And if you looked at most people's naked body, it would have been awful to look at because they didn't do exercise. And so their bodies went downhill rather quickly. But they crushed themselves into these garments. And even in the summertime, you're expected to wear full garments. Imagine how uncomfortable that would be when it was 95 out and you had to be with a wig. And if you look, most people were bald. They'd have to have their hair cut. So wigs were everywhere. And then the smell of the human body would be covered up by perfumes. Just imagine being in a room where you had 1,000 people wearing perfumes. And if you were within 10 feet of someone, you'd see that their gums were puffy and bleeding and pussy, and their mouth was stunk. You know, but that was considered normal. Anyhow, I'm going to do a documentary tracking a member of the royal court, but then the village beside the court, and how the average person lived, and then the person in the country. I'm going to go through 24 hours in a day and just show you what the actual life of a person would be. And that's one of my pet projects. Now, for finishing up today, for those of you who want to eat fish, there are fish that I could recommend and fish I definitely would not recommend. And so here are the fish, types of fish that could be eaten, mainly because they are friendly in the omega-3 fatty acids. They are a complete protein, and those omega fatty acids turn off inflammation in the heart and the brain and in other joints in your body. But remember, they are going to be having a certain amount of mercury, no matter where they swim in the world, because all of the water is polluted. They'll also be exposed to some polychlorinated biphenyls, or PCBs, though that's relatively low. So the albacore tuna, that's generally the canned tuna, is a trolling pole caught albacore tuna. The salmon, the wild caught Alaskan freshwater coho, and it travels strictly monitored by biologists, making this wild-caught fish a low-mercury and low-PCB choice. And coho, C-O-H-O, salmon, was raised in closed freshwater pens that minimize contamination. Then you have sardines, probably the healthiest of all the fish. They're caught mainly the wild-caught in the Pacific Ocean. And this is a young, small fish. And it's lowest in mercury and PCBs, and it's very high in the omega-3 fatty acids and other nutrients as well. It's very high in calcium and high in vitamin D and phosphorus. That helps your bones. And it also contains coenzyme Q10, which very few do. And then the rainbow trout, which is farmed, be careful about that, because if the ponds are not healthy, the fish are not healthy. And then I would not trust any oysters if I were you, because they're almost all farmed. Oysters farmed in natural reefs, those are different because they have low mercury levels. Now, here's the fish that I absolutely, if I were you, and choosing fish I would not ever eat, ever. King mackerel. Those are known as king because they can live 25 years or longer. That means that the larger the fish, the more accumulated mercury and PCBs from eating smaller fish that get in there. Shark. Shark lives a long life and is loaded to the gills with toxins. Lots of mercury. Swordfish. It is one of the most contaminated fish on the market for mercury and PCBs. Never eat it. Grouper. Grouper is a bottom feeder, and it acquires high levels of mercury and contaminants over its lifetime. And it's a large fish. Orange roughy. It's also a long-lived fish. Some can live over 100 years. And I would not eat it because they're loaded with mercury and PCBs. So there you have it. I'm asked all the time, well, Gary, I'm not going to become a vegan, and what can I do? So I've given you the best and the worst that you could do if you're going to have fish. Of course, the best thing would be to let the fish live a long and healthy life. But in the world we live in, the reality is most people have to have something to transition from. And I would rather have a person transition from regular meat to organic meat to no meat, and from regular chicken to organic chicken to no chicken. In other words, over a period of time till one day they are vegan, rather than having it so strict that a person says, well, is there any option? We say, no, wrong. There are always options. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you for listening. We've got a lot of program coming at you. I've got commentaries in a moment. Let me give you an idea of some of the people coming up the remainder of this week. Continuing with our conversations with remarkable minds, Andrew Harvey, one of the most noted British scholars in the world on spirituality. And he is the founder of the Institute of Sacred Activism. We're going to talk about turning our activism into a sacred duty to honor our services to each other and the planet. Then, ever hear of the Public Acclimation Program? A federal program, mostly through the Department of Defense, it's intended to leak information to the public in a manner that doesn't appear as that information originates from the government. Now, why are we now finding more and more evidence that the U.S. government has been aware of UFOs for a long time? Well, let me tell you something. Doing a program on UFOs where you have some outstanding scholars, not crackpots, who have irrefutable evidence and can back it up in a court of law, that's who we have coming on. So I thought it's time to do something on a topic that's rarely discussed in the mainstream media, except in a kind of a mocking and condescending way. Now, this is from John Quealy. Let us, quote, not be deceived. Cornel West names Obama as a war criminal. Like Nixon and Bush and others, the law is suspended for the president but applies for the rest of us. I'll quote this, it is short. Philosophy professor, social critic, and activist Cornel West says that like Richard Nixon and George Bush, there is no way to avoid the conclusion that President Obama, due to his execution of foreign wars and direction of clandestine military operations overseas, resulting in direct and foreseeable deaths of innocent people, should be called out for what he is, quote, a war criminal. And that is what he said on the air. Quote, we've been talking about this for a good while, the immorality of drones dropping bombs on innocent people. It's been over 200 children so far. These are war crimes. I think we have to be very honest. Dropping bombs on innocent people. You or I, Brother Travis, if we kill an innocent person, we're going to jail, and we're going to be there forever. End quote. Well, Professor Cornel West, you were off by an enormous number on how many children have been killed by drones, but we commend you for having the courage to stand up and state your point. From Glenn Ford, who does a program on our network, this is short. It's from Black Agenda Report. Obama's State of the Corporate Union, I'll quote it. It was an impassioned performance by a cynical politician who offers little but corporate tax incentives and continued austerity. Barack Obama peppered his State of the Union address with up-tempo buzzwords about illusory progress, but the president's substantive message was that he is determined to complete the austerity bargain he struck with the Republicans in 2011. Thus, it is a sign of progress that, quote, we are more than halfway towards the goal of $4 trillion in deficit reduction that economists say we need to stabilize our finances, meaning he will collaborate with the GOP in cutting almost $2 trillion more. The big cuts will come from those programs that enjoy overwhelming support among Americans. He claims to be with them in spirit while opposing them in practice. Quote, those of us who care deeply about programs like Medicare must embrace the need for modest reforms. Otherwise, our retirement programs will crowd out the investments we need for our children and jeopardize the promise of a secure retirement for future generations. End quote. His reasoning is identical to the Republicans who say these programs must be bled or die. Obama created the model to gut entitlements through the Simpson-Bowles Deficit Reduction Commission, appointed well before the GOP took control of the House. Now he pretends that the cuts have been forced upon him, but that he will acquiesce in the spirit of compromise. On Medicare, I'm prepared, quote, to enact reforms that will achieve the same amount of health care savings by the beginning of the next decade as reforms proposed by the bipartisan Simpson-Bowles Commission. He constructs a phony trade-off for children, the poor, and the elderly. The cuts must come, he says. This is the double whammy. Austerity in people's programs is traded for tax breaks for corporations that will, in totally discredited theory, bring back the jobs they had outsourced overseas. But don't complain, says Obama. None of us get 100% of what we want. Yeah, and most of us will get the shaft. Obama's jobs program is almost entirely a corporate tax incentive scheme to bribe corporations to send home the jobs they sent offshore, where they have also hidden tens of trillions of taxation dollars, a subject not deemed worthy of mention in a national discussion of shared sacrifice and patriotic obligations. The military-industrial complex will make, quote, America a magnet for new jobs and manufacturing, says the president. 15 manufacturing hubs will be built around the businesses that partner with the Department of Defense and Energy to turn regions left behind by globalization into global centers of high-tech jobs. Well, you can bet there are huge corporate subsidies involved through negative taxation. Obama will repair America's infrastructure to a fix-it-first program that nobody has ever heard before and has no price tag, which means it doesn't exist in anything more than rhetorical form. Those business incentives just keep on coming. All one need to qualify to say the word jobs, but don't you dare say public works. The corporate subsidizer-in-chief says, quote, let's offer incentives to companies to hire Americans who've got what it takes to fill that job opening. Yeah. Who will get that done? By offering new tax credits to businesses that hire and invest, Obama can do a passive Al Green. But when it comes to public policy in 2013, he sings only one song, Tax Schemes for Business. And he stole that tune from the GOP. Obama's black boosters will no doubt point to the president's concern for the hardest hit to conclude that he is now open to targeted aid to those communities that have become most devastated. Not so. He is simply open to aiding corporations under any and all circumstances. His administration failed to spend almost all of the $7 billion set aside by Congress for the hardest hit fund to aid communities hurt worse by the housing collapse. Hard-hit people don't get special attention from this administration. Well-off corporations do. I'm Gary Knoll. We're talking about the issues that make a difference in our lives. And finally, I believe many of us are concerned about human misery. The majority of those we incarcerate in this country, and we incarcerate a quarter of the world's prison population, have never committed a violent crime. 11 million undocumented immigrants face the possibility of imprisonment and deportation. Reality check for all of the corporate Democrats and corporate liberals. President Barack Obama outpaced George Bush and deported more than 400,000 people since he took office last year, and it will probably double this year. Families, once someone is seized, detained, and deported, are thrown into crisis. Children come home from school and find they have lost their mothers or fathers. The small incomes that once sustained them are snuffed out. Those who remain behind often become destitute. But human beings matter little in the corporate state. We myopically serve the rapacious appetites of those dedicated to exploitation and maximizing profit. And our corporate masters view prisons, as they do education and health care and more. It's a good business. The 320-bed Elizabeth Detention Center, which houses only men, is run by one of the largest operators and owners of for-profit prisons in the country, Corrections Corporation of America, CCA. It traded on the New York Stock Exchange, has annual revenues in excess of $1.7 billion. An average of 81,384 inmates are in its facilities on any one day. This is a greater number, according to the American Civil Liberties Union, than banking, and that they say in banking bodies, than that held by the states of New York, New Jersey combined. The for-profit prisons and their lobbyists in Washington and state capitals have successfully blocked immigration reform, have prevented a challenge to our draconian drug laws, and are pushing through tougher detention policies. Locking up more and more human beings is the bedrock of the industrious profit center. These corporations are the engines behind the explosion of our prison system. They are the reason we have spent $300 billion on new prisons. They are also the reason serious reform is impossible. The United States from 1970 to 2005 increased its prison population by 700%. That's according to statistics from the ACLU. The Federal Bureau of Justice Statistics, the ACLU report notes, says that for-profit companies presently control about 18% of federal prisoners and 6.7% of all state prisoners. Private prisons account for nearly all of the new prisons built in the last 5 years, and nearly half of all immigrants detained by the federal government are shipped to for-profit prisons. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, which imprisons about 400,000 undocumented people a year, has an annual budget of more than $5 billion. ICE is planning to expand its operations by establishing several mega detention centers, most run by private corporations in states such as New Jersey, Texas, Florida, California, and Illinois. Many of these private contractors are, not surprisingly, you guessed it, large campaign donors to the law and order politicians, including New Jersey's Governor Chris Christie. In CCA's annual report to the Securities and Exchange Commission, they cited that they are building and building and building. Quote, the demand for our facilities and services could be adversely affected by the relaxation of enforcement efforts, leniency in convictions or parole standards and sentencing practices, or through the decriminalization of certain activities that are currently prescribed by criminal laws. So it declares. And it goes on. Any changes with respect to drugs and controlled substances or illegal immigration potentially reduce demand for correctional facilities, as would making more inmates eligible for early release based on good behavior. They gave $710,000 in political contributions to candidates for federal and state office and political parties and supported 527 groups, PACs, and super PACs. They spent a lot of money on lobbying. Just $1.7 million for federal officials alone. The two largest private prison companies received over $3 billion in revenue. Their executive top people make $3 million a year. And what do they charge? $200 a day to house an inmate. And they pay their detention officers as little as $10 an hour. We have abandoned the common good. We have been stripped of our rights and voice. Corporations write our laws and determine how we structure our society. We have all become victims. There are no politicians or institutions, no political parties or courts that are independent enough or strong enough to resist the corporate onslaught. Greater and greater numbers of human beings will be consumed. The poor, the vulnerable, the undocumented, the weak, the elderly, the sick, the children will all go first. And those of us watching helplessly outside the gates, we will go next. Back in a moment. Welcome all of you to this program. I'm Gary Knoll. We are going to go to our guests in just a second. I'm going to do a commentary tomorrow on why I feel that Bill McKibben and his organization and Daryl Hannah and Robert Kennedy Jr., noble as it may seem to protest the way they have and get themselves arrested, I believe they are on the wrong track. And I believe that they're extremely naive and do not fully understand the nature of the cause they're engaged in. And I will share what I hope will be taken as positive input of what could be done to make a difference. Because at the end of the day, if you take away any of the celebrities, no one shows up. And all the people who tried through their protest and their obstruction and their arrest to have an issue this important, like the pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline, with the tar sands oil, that will get completely set aside. Then what could make a difference? And the extremely small outcome of their big march on Sunday and many of the speeches, well, you would have thought that you were at Obama campaign rally. Unfortunately, they got it wrong. I will address that in a commentary that I'm writing today, tomorrow. Also, we are now looking for our homestead project. We're looking for someone who has got the talents of a builder, all kinds of skills. If you have those skills, call Scott at 646-926-5435. 646-926-5435. Let us welcome Reverend Matthew Fox to our program.
Hello, Gary.
I'd given the introduction to you earlier in the program, so I'm going to go right to the issues at hand. And before we look at the resignation of Pope Benedict and his implications for the church and Christianity, I feel it might be best to have you give some kind of indication about how powerful and influential Cardinal is once he becomes Pope. And there's an estimated 1.2 billion Catholics in the world. That is approximately 1 in 7 persons. This is a huge event for Catholicism. So if you were to be completely objective about the power of the cardinal before he became pope, the power he had over the last pope when he was that person's right-hand person, share that with us now.
Well, Pope John Paul II, one of his first acts, really, was to appoint Cardinal Ratzinger head of the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith, which used to be called the Holy Inquisition. And Cardinal Ratzinger, who later became Pope Benedict, played that role to the hilt. He really became an inquisitor because he silenced now over 105 theologians from all over the world. I was just one of the 105. And in silencing theologians, you're spreading fear, the fear of ideas, the fear of thinking. And so he really shut down thinking in the church. We've had a dumbed-down Catholicism for 40 years, deliberately. It's a strategy. And they've now reduced theology to, number one, a catechism, which Ratzinger created, and number two, just saying yes to whatever the Pope says. And that is not the tradition of the Church. The tradition of the Church has, for centuries, honored theologians. There's always been some tension, of course, but the Second Vatican Council, in particular, had a whole document on honoring freedom of conscience and so forth, and said that theologians have a right to open debate, etc., etc. All that has been shut down by the last two papacies. So really what you have here is what Lord Acton, the British historian, said after the First Vatican Council. He said, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And the corruption in the Catholic Church today is so clear. It's clear, obviously, at the level of the pedophile scandals and the way they were handled. You know, every organization has scandals like this, but the question is how the CEOs handle them. And what's really clear is that the bishops and cardinals and pope sat on these things and allowed children to be, continued to be abused, even when they knew about some of these horrible cases, such as the case that was documented on HBO recently of the 200 deaf children in Milwaukee, and the passing around of pedophile priests from parish to parish and diocese, and even to different countries, such as Cardinal Mahoney indulged in from Los Angeles. Those facts came out this past week. And then, of course, there's the scandal going on in the Vatican itself, of the butler releasing documents, showing the infighting, showing the financial scandals. The Italian government this past year refused to recognize credit cards from the Vatican because they were worried about the money laundering that's been going on there. So it's one thing after another. It's the intellectual scandal, but the abuse of theologians, it's the abuse of children in the cover-up, and it's financial abuse as well. So it's not a pretty picture. I think the Catholic Church today is in meltdown as we know it. The structures are not redeemable. But as a theologian, I say, hey, great, the Holy Spirit's stepping in and wiping out the structures we've known for centuries, and it's time to replace it with something closer to the Gospels, closer to Jesus, real teaching about peace and justice and love. And so I think it's a great moment in the history of religion and the history of Christianity. And Protestants, too, have their own issues today that they have to be part of this renewal as well. This is not just a Catholic thing. Humanity itself is facing its own demise with the climate change and with so many other issues, the money we spend on war instead of on peace and healing and education. So religion has to, help lead and not be part of the problem. So I think all this is the Holy Spirit at work, stirring things up, yes, creating chaos, but also out of chaos comes creativity.
I appreciate the overview. You had mentioned that you were a victim of the Pope's pogrom against theologians. You mentioned over 100 that you know of. There might have been more when the current Pope was the cardinal and in charge of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which you stated was literally the Inquisition in earlier times. Can you give us a reason why Ratzinger and Pope John Paul before him, both with strong links to radical right-wing theology such as Opus Dei, were so militant against that part of the Christian message that advocated servicing the needs of the poor. And during Ratzinger's reign as a cardinal, he nearly single-handedly eradicated liberation theology, which was growing immensely in Latin America, and so many priests, nuns, and clergy and scholars were murdered for. Yet the Church sided more with the murders from repressive political regimes than to side with needs of those victimized by the powerful and wealthy elite. Why do you feel this war against theologians and against Jesus' message of love and caring held such a priority for Ratzinger?
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate how you summarize that, and it's so true. I think it's one of the most dastardly things that he and John Paul II did was to destroy the base community movement, liberation theology movement of Latin America, which did so much good for so many. And instead, they sided with Pinochet. Pinochet, of course, was a bloody dictator of Chile who literally killed thousands, including priests, nuns, and lay workers who stood for justice. And behind it all, frankly, at that time, was the CIA. Because the CIA under Reagan was headed by extreme right-wing Catholic, Casey, who in fact supported Father Maciel so thoroughly. Now, Father Maciel was a Mexican priest who started his own seminaries and abused over 20 young seminarians sexually. He also had two wives on the side with four children of his own, and he abused them. But he was so close to Ratzinger and the Pope that the Pope took him on his plane rides with him. The Pope had a big event at St. Peter's outdoors where he ordained 50 of his seminarians, and they had all these rich millionaires. Maciel raised more money than anyone in the history of the Catholic Church. And Maciel was very close to Pinochet, the dictator. So too was Cardinal Sodano, who was in fact the Pope's legate under Pinochet. And John Paul II plucked Sodano out of Chile to make him a Secretary of State. And the Secretary of State in the Vatican is the number two man in charge after the Pope. And this guy, whose hands were bloody from Pinochet, who was also very close to Maciel, ran the papacy, if you will, as Secretary of State for many, many years. And then when Benedict became Pope, he appointed Cardinal Bertone as his Secretary of State. Bertone wrote a eulogy, practically, a glorification of Father Maciel as a preface to one of Father Maciel's books, which in fact has been proven was 80% plagiarized from a priest who died in 1943. So, and yet this Bertone is still running things in the Vatican. He's still Secretary of State. He's the one who got this one cardinal who was archbishop who was trying to reform the Vatican. He got him exiled as ambassador to the United States. Again, this is all part of the chicanery going on. But you have to understand, the CIA in the 70s and 80s was very anti-liberation theology. There was a meeting 2 months after Reagan was sworn in as president in Santa Fe by the National Security Council. And their one question was, how can we destroy liberation theology in Latin America? And they concluded, we can't destroy it, but we can split the church. So they went after the Pope with lots and lots of cash for solidarity. Casey, the head of CIA, made 29 trips personally to the Vatican with satchels full of cash, gave it to the Pope, and the exchange was, a quid pro quo, was that the Pope would go after liberation theologians. And that was the deal, and that was done, and this is fully documented in my book called The Pope's War. And it actually was a very well-known journalist who documented this, and it was a cover story in Time magazine, but he presented it as a very positive thing because it helped to bring down the Berlin Wall, if you will, the Solidarity Movement. He neglected to show the dark side of how it has destroyed so much of Christianity in South America.
I have one last short answer question for you. And by the way, in addition to the war against theologians that you mentioned, Ratzinger's legacy will also include rampant sex abuse, cover-ups through the church, and
right.
then financial scandals. I think the case of Cardinal Bernard Law of Boston, who had been reassigning criminal priests and
right.
bishops rather than turning them into the law, is a classical example. And then you can find a Cardinal Law promoted and sent to Rome with an increased salary. That's the nonsense
Correct.
Went on. But to end this, I want to have you take a look at the edifice that is cracking and that will hopefully usher in some fundamental change. And stepping away from the Pope now, your entire career as a theologian, scholar, and an activist, and many would say a mystic, has been to bring back the mystical elements buried in Christianity back into the open and make such experiences available to all. And you've done this in a very ecumenical context with leaders from all religions, including even the pagan community, which got you into such trouble with the church. My question is, why is the Catholic Church, and I would need almost to include all the Christianites today, so reticent towards mysticism?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do actually with the Enlightenment period. Theodore Rosak has said the Enlightenment held mysticism up for ridicule as the worst offense against science and reason. So mysticism is about the right brain, and science and reason is about the left brain. And what you want in a healthy society is both are working together. But unfortunately, our culture defines education far more in terms of the left brain. And, Einstein himself said that. He said that we're given two brains, the sacred gift of intuition, which is right brain or mysticism. That's me speaking there. And he said, and rationality. And he said, the rationality should serve intuition. But unfortunately, we live in a society where rationality is promoted and the intuition is neglected. So that's exactly what I'm saying. I think that Western culture, since the 18th century, has held mysticism up for ridicule. But this is changing today. As you say, indigenous traditions have kept it alive. Artists have kept it alive. And there's a yearning in people's hearts. When I was writing this book on the Pope, in fact, I got so depressed after 6 months. I told a friend it was like, I felt like... that fellow who lives in the garbage can in Sesame Street. I put the manuscript down, and I said to myself, I don't think I'll ever finish this. Then I wrote a book on Christian mystics, and that got me so enthused and energized again that I had the energy to finish the Pope book after all. But it took the mystics to help me to finish the Pope book.
You've done a remarkable job. The book is The Pope's War. The website is matthewfox.org. Thank you very much for being on with us today. I'm Gary Noll, and I want to thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Now, let's take our talk back, listeners. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888 is the number to call in and share your comments and insights and points of view. Happy to have you on board. And first up is Lou Ann Panessi. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello, Gary. You know, I was going to read an email today from someone, but I decided I'm going to share this with you instead. Your commentary hour last night that aired was just one of the most insightful commentary hours yet, in my opinion. But I got an email from a woman from Santa Fe, and she says she's one of four women who belong to a healing circle. And they did their healing circle about an hour before the show. So they were very grounded, and all of them were very deeply affected by the show last night. They said they were humbled by it. It gave them insights that they never even considered. And it just has to be one of the most historical shows you've done yet, Gary.
I appreciate their insights or anyone else's who might have been moved, because we had some remarkable minds on talking about the issues of living an authentic life instead of coming from the dark side, the evil side. It was Thomas Fuller who said, "Zeal without knowledge is fire without light." And we have an awful lot of people who want to change but don't get themselves into a mindset to change. They stop short of opening the door of innate wisdom, of seeing the truth in all things, of staying non-judgmental and simply letting something be what it is, but understanding it for what it is so you can know how to approach it. That's what the panel last night was discussing. If anyone would like, they can go to the archives and just download Progressive Commentary Hour for last night and listen to it and share it with other people, please. So I'm happy for that women's healing circle out there in, where was it?
Santa Fe.
Santa Fe. What else do you have for us?
Well, I have a lovely testimonial from someone, just have initials here, VR, and she says she wants to thank you. She says, "I've been eating unprocessed foods and exercising," and she says, "I've had multiple sclerosis for many years, and now I'm off my MS medications, and I feel terrific." She says, "I love your documentaries. They've guided me to this point." And she says, I'm thrilled to be able to give you this testimony. I never thought I'd feel this good." And she says, "I love life now." So I thought that was lovely, lovely little testimonial to come in.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Well, we're out of time for this hour. And you can Luann, tell people how they can send you their comments so you can read them?
Surely. They can email me at WHNN, like William Harry Nancy Nancy, WHNN at AOL.com. Or people can call me at 631-504-6198.
That's Luann Panessi. Luann, thank you. Now let's go over and say hello to Utrice Lead standing by. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. How are you doing today?
Good.
Well, we're going to be talking, today's open phones, really, and we're closing out on two issues we've been following. One, the Republicans wanting more information on Benghazi, and we'll be discussing a picking up from last week on Christopher Dorner.
We look forward to it.
Thank you.
Utrice Lead coming right now. Have a nice day.